What is happening? Welcome to another episode of The Craft. My name is Nick Pollock, and joining me, oh, look at this. It's Eno Saris. Oh my gosh. Eno, what a surprise to see you here.
Yes, and I brought my polar bear.
You did. Look at that guy. He's super nestled on the couch.
That is my polar bear, by the way. Soon you'll be seeing him if we do some sort of visual version of this.
Yes.
But that is my polar bear from like when I was 5 years old.
Is that right?
Yeah, we've moved so often, and like all that I really have from my childhood is my card collection, which is over here, and that bear.
Oh my God. I had a Curious George. And long story short, there was a moment from high school where my friend and I had to bring something from our like childhood into class, and we're both like, oh, mine's the best. No, mine's the best. Then everybody put them out in the middle, and we saw two Curious Georges there. And we looked at each other. It was amazing.
We both had Curious Georges.
We both had Curious Georges. The same exact one.
Then the argument stopped. You're like,
there it is. I'm like, oh yeah, okay. But mine was better. Do you have a name for that polar bear?
I don't remember it.
Oh, come on, Eno. All right, everybody, send us what you think Eno Saris's polar bear should be called. But yeah, so today, of course, we have another episode of The Craft. And before we actually get to our main topic, which I think is a great one, you have a lot of great things prepared. I just want to do a little review of what we talked about last week. We did see
some of those. Yeah, because you nailed it. Hayden Birdsong came out pumping 97s for like three innings. I think he did settle down to close.
He hit a 98. Yeah. But I mean, the thing is, though, he showed up and did kind of the same against Atlanta. Uh-huh. Like he was still sitting 96 and change.
I think kids come up and throw as hard as they can because they're right. Like, if my elbow pops, I'm on the major league IL.
There you go. What's actually nuts though is we actually saw last night two guys, and I think it's a perfect showcase of why I'm not really into Hayden Birdsong as much, because I mean, he threw so many horrible fastballs. Like, that's just a product of overthrowing, is just, boom, there's one. Okay, that's not going to, nope, nothing. There's a free ball, and you just ruined the count, the whole sequence. And then you had someone else who made his first career start, had only had one inning in relief, who was very much polished in the way of, hey, always competitive, had a series of three pitches, was throwing about 95, actually struck out a guy 97 down the pipe. That they swung through. I'm giving you guys hints to see if you know who this is. He's pitching for the Phillies. That is Michael Mercado.
Oh.
And I was actually more impressed than I thought I'd be because I watched that one inning. The cutter was actually had some legitimate upside as like a gyro slider, really, down and in glove side a couple times. It really was just more of a strike pitch. Then he has a curveball that he does trust a decent amount with that fastball. And it's not, I wouldn't say any of it is necessarily, oh man, this guy's elite. You see and just go, oh gosh, what a stud. But I think there is something to be said about coming up from the minors and not looking like you're just throwing as hard as you can all the time, but also being at a level that is, yeah, I am being competitive with my pitches constantly. And that was really cool to see from Mercado. I'm very curious if he continues to get these starts for the Phillies with Taiwan Walker out. And if he actually does settle into some sort of role there, I'm curious if you got a chance to look at Mercado, and I'm curious if you've changed your tune at all on Hayden Birdsong.
Mercado, he does exhibit something that's a little bit interesting, which is that the cutter is 88 and his four seam is 96. And,
right.
And so if you port over to Stuff Plus on Fangraphs, you'll see like an 85 Stuff Plus on the cutter, but that's judging it as if it were a fastball.
Mm.
And I think a cutter with like 7 miles difference is more of a gyro slider.
Yeah, I'm with you.
Plus, if you look at the type of movement, it's fairly close to a 0-0.
Mm-hmm.
Which is not savant speak, but
that's like a bullet slider. Is that right?
Yeah. Bullet sliders are like the perfect bullet slider that has 0% spin efficiency is turning none of its spin into movement and therefore should theoretically have a 0-0
right.
Movement profile. And that's close to what he's got. You know, I'm cribbing together a couple different places here because of the different naming conventions and the number conventions, but looks like a 0-0 type gyro slider. And with a 6-7 mile hour difference, that speaks to me more cut tur versus cut fastball.
Oh yeah, definitely. Yes. And, it's normally cut fastball is like 3 to me. Something along those lines.
So we're going to maybe tighten up that definition in the off season. But if you just for now, if you're looking at a player and you say, we got pretty good results on that thing and it looked pretty good to my eye and Stuff Plus says, you know, it's not good like Arrighetti's cutter. So when you're looking at Mercado's cutter, just think of it as a slider and just mentally nudge that Stuff Plus number up. What I do like about his debut, and it's not really statistically significant, but it lines up with what you saw with your own eyes, is the good command. Also a fastball that rates as above average. We're going to get to a little bit more of that, but I see a 107 Stuff Plus on a fastball in one start. I actually care about that already. You know, that's why I like Schwellenbach more than I liked Hurston Waldrop in Atlanta.
Yeah.
And I'm just more predisposed to liking you if you've got a number above 100 in that fastball sinker or cutter category.
And so, you don't want to see Eno when he doesn't like you. I do want to mention really quickly, I want to also just get a quick hit from you on David Festa, who's going to go today as we're recording this. So you actually going to be hearing this tomorrow after that start, but it's going to be actually Christian Scott and David Festa, which is going to be such a fun day.
Oh, that is a fun guys. One.
Christian Menyes are also coming up, which I'm curious about. It's going to be the Dodgers, but that's a big breaking ball guy. And there's also Valente Belazzo, which is hilarious to me that he got 8 strikeouts yesterday, but I don't believe that guy whatsoever.
No. Festa, a good fastball, good slider, and the model didn't like the changeup, but my eyes did.
Yeah, no, right. That was a case of like, okay, cool. We know that changeup will be there. The MLB debut. He has a 3-pitch mix, a Severino mix that we love from old, not the modern 63% sinker Severino mix.
And minor league numbers like the changeup. So I watched a good deal of that. One thing I did want to ask you about David Festa was because I don't, you know, I'm not a big mechanics guru, but I posted something about his first strikeout. What was weird was that he was pitching and he didn't get strikeouts, you know, and he got to 2 strike counts and he didn't put guys away. And maybe that's partially using the changeup and getting weak contact. It wasn't a bad start. He didn't really have that sort of put away killer mentality yet, or the sequencing or the pitch, like something was missing. He didn't strike guys out. And, and when I posted his first strikeout and, which was on a changeup and I think it was Jock Peterson.
Yep.
And somebody said, you know, repost it and said, like, what kind of mechanics are these? And so I watched I did that load random video thing that you can do in Savant and like kind of cycled through some and I guess. So to sort of describe it, Festa gets really small in the back. Like he pulls his leg up to his, like he gets really small and then he reaches back and then he's super over the top.
Right.
I will say that watching it a few times, it almost felt like there were components and it wasn't as fluid as I wanted. Like they were kind of like, and I do this and I do this and I do this, you know, but I didn't see something where I was like, I rarely see something where I'm like, what the hell are you doing? Or like, this is bad.
Yeah, right,
so
right.
I don't know if you noticed anything in his mechanics when you're watching.
Well, there are a couple things I want to mention really quickly. First of all, you just very much G-rated that quote tweet, which is hilarious. It's like 4 curses are in that. And just moved past that.
Second, I
know this is gonna embarrass Eno, but I gotta talk about his professional attitude here of just like doing a radio spot in like 10 minutes and then come back to this podcast and you guys didn't even notice. That is just Eno in a nutshell.
But also not so great amazing. Professionalism to forget that I had radio.
I wasn't going to mention that part. It was like, cool, I was going to say that we were going to do like the podcast a little bit and then come back. And like, you just went one to another, bam, 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 as if nothing happened.
I got that's a live stream guy after that we deal
this. You know how to guys. Do this. You know how to do this stuff.
amazing. Absolutely amazing. So with Festa, it's one of those things. Actually, when I was starting to do mechanics, and I don't know if I believe it now, was I am 6'4". I'm a lanky dude. Like, my wingspan is longer than 6'4" too. And I had coaches say, all right, you don't want to get smaller because you want to utilize that as much as you can, right? You don't want to shrink down. And I would shrink a little bit. I would bend my back a little bit. I wouldn't stay tall. And that led me to actually doing less of the load in my back leg than I wanted to. And I would just fall down the mound, right?
This is like getting tight in the back.
Right. So when I would do my lifts, and what I would do then is I would shrink my shoulders a bit. I would bend forward a little bit towards
the base. He does a little bit of that.
Right. He does a really condensed cocoon.
Yeah. He does a little cocoon. So you think that affects your ability to sort of stay stacked or stay on the back?
The whole idea there, right, is that on release, then I am not getting all my power because then I'm not stretched out as I want to be and not be able to release it. And thing is, that's right and wrong. That is, on release, you don't want to stay small. You know, you don't want to get less extension. You don't want to short arm the ball. Absolutely. And that's the correct part of that. The wrong part is that if you're able to expand, it can actually be very effective. That's what Festa is doing. He's getting to that condense. It's kind of like a spring. Then he's back loading.
He is getting tall out of it.
Right. He's going down. And then essentially, he keeps his shoulders up while the legs go down the mound, uh-huh. Right? It's not like he's springing back up. He is because the mound is going down. He just goes forward from there and then falls, and it works for him. Clearly, it also, being a lanky guy, you want to make sure you get that extension. He has that's about 7 feet. That's what we want to see. And I'm a fan of it. I don't want to talk about deception a ton. I hate that. It's something that I fell for as a trap earlier on in my career. And it's something that's just so, who knows?
I mean, there's so many different ways to be deceptive.
Exactly.
Like, do you have steam shifted wake? Do you hide the ball in the back? Do you, you know?
I will say that I think low extension guys are less deceptive, including also just having less, more reaction time for the batter. They're showing the ball sooner. And there is something about that when it comes to extension of just, not just the time.
And how's this extension?
His extension, I believe, is 7, okay. Or if something. If it's not that, it's close to it. Like, I don't think of
he's kind of a lanky guy, and it looks like he's 7 mound.
Yeah. So, I was a fan of that, but right, I mean, traditionally, I want to see like the Noah Syndergaard types that are, falling down the mound, but also getting that back load and really getting through it, and it's just smooth and clean, and everything is nice. Remember seeing his debut and being like, oh my gosh, Syndergaard, this is like one of the best debuts I've ever seen, because like this is completely straight and good and lovely.
It's a lot easier. There's this concept in mechanics that I think I'm getting right. I mean, the mechanics are just like,
I know, they're the weirdest snake oil there is.
Joey Votto like never really wanted to talk about it because he's like, I don't want to sound like an idiot. Like, he literally said that. And that's how I feel.
There's always going to be the thing about mechanics is that everyone's going to have different opinions about it. Yeah. So whatever you say, someone's upset.
Someone hates it.
Yeah. And I'm so sorry, everyone.
But I've seen this concept of sort of drift. And the idea of drift is that you stay stacked. So your torso is vertical, mm-hmm. and you're staying over your back leg, but you're drifting down the mound. And that helps with extension, but it also helps you keep hip shoulder separation is the mm-hmm. source of a lot of velo.
Yep.
So if you're staying vertical and you're keeping that back shoulder, you're throwing shoulder back while you're going down the mountain, you're kind of drifting towards release, improving your extension, but keeping your shoulder back for that whip. And so, you know, it is hard for me to see when I look at Festa. It's hard for me to see the drift. There's some guys where it's really easy.
You just
see them sort of drift down the mound and then put that leg down and rip around. And with Festa, it's like you can't see it because he's doing all this stuff with his hands and getting all
cocooned. I mean, it's because, as you said, like, he has the compartments of like, I'm going to go to this.
Yeah.
Which, by the way, I actually see that always as a positive, because that is ways to do those. Those are checks. Those are like, if you have it too much of one pot of a thing, you don't really know what the problem is.
That's right. And,
you know, my coach used to call it the sweet spot, which is where your arm leaves your glove and stops and holds before delivery. He always had the philosophy that it has to be down. Like you need your arm fully extended down. And I've learned over time, like, nope.
That's some guys can do that. Arm path in the back. That's
right. Great, and he wanted me to have the long arm path because I have such long arms. I'm going to get more velocity that way. And what's funny is that when I didn't do that, I realized it actually felt better at times and my timing was better. And I didn't understand why, because it wasn't my sweet spot. But also he was right that there were times that I wouldn't go through the normal mechanics of it. And the times when I'm not getting down to that and I'm just kind of too much short arming it, which is ultimately if my mechanics were that, it would be better. But because they were inconsistent, that meant that it was me missing my spots and everything like that.
If you want to see a change in arm path, Giolito is a big one. I think he used to have a much longer one. And then he got super short army where he just sort of picks up the ball and throws it, you know?
Exactly. That was a huge thing. All of a sudden we saw the cocked elbow go straight back. And I remember actually there was a moment that we saw that from Robbie Ray, like, oh, this is great. And then he removed it and was good again. and that's really the moral of the story here is that
mechanics, right. Yeah, mechanics
different.
They kind of fit different people differently.
So long story short here, I'm just going to give a quick overview of mechanics because for anyone listening to this, the mystical word, as you mentioned, the whole point of them is to generate power from your legs. Mm-hmm. And be able to create a whole kinetic chain, really just, hey, I'm pushing off my back leg and please let that get to my hand, mm-hmm. right? How do I get that to work? You have your legs push. That means then you open your hips. And then as you open your hips, then you whip open your shoulders. Then with your shoulders, your arm follows. The arm should never be the thing that pulls. That is sometimes we see that. That's what overthrowing is. There's a focus on the arm. It should never be the arm. The arm should just be like a catapult, a product of everything else. It just whips out and should be relaxed.
You want to be thinking about turning your torso fast.
Exactly.
That direction turns your torso fast. Keeping your shoulder back, you know, and reaching back. This is called sort of a scapular retraction, which is sort of reaching back in the back with the back shoulder.
Even just as cocking your arm is what we used to say. A guy who cocks his arm. I know that's a phrase that people don't like anymore, but that's just what it is. Where you hold the arm up in a way and you're trying to go
and
from there.
Reaching back for velo, but you're not doing it for the arm. You're actually doing it for the shoulder to interact with your front hip.
Exactly.
So
and it's waiting.
Kind of that rubber band.
It's preparing for that moment.
Yeah.
And then when it comes to actually throwing the baseball, the more that you are straight and through it and less from side to side, that means essentially more of the power is going straight line toward the plates.
I think it's part of why you don't see plus velo from Tyler Rogers, you know, even guys. Who was the guy that was like the side armor guy for the D-backs before Sewald?
You're talking about a reliever?
Yeah.
Come on.
You're just like, I don't care. Anyway, you don't see plus velo from side armors. And, you know, the one exception kind of has been Chris Sale.
Or Randy Johnson.
And Randy Johnson. But there's a lot of people who have yelled over the years about their mechanics.
And the thing about side armors is I was told don't do it when I was a kid. And the reason for that is it's more about the arm. It's more about arm strength and not as much of the normal mechanics as we know. And I have to mention with Chris Sale, we're like, well, that's a side armor. He is, but I think Randy Johnson was a standing side armor, a traditional one in the sense of where the actual arm slot was relative to the torso.
Mm-hmm.
While Chris Sale bends, like if you take Chris Sale and then just adjust his torso and where his head is and straighten it up, it's normal. Right. He bends his entire body there. You know, I remember a coach telling me about you have your release point of a normal one, whatever natural one is. And then you just twist your body to go sidearm or you go higher or you go the other side to go.
I think people think that's bad for your back.
Oh, I don't disagree with them.
Yeah.
And a lot of these guys do that. That's how they get the lower arm angles or whatnot, because you see them bend. And actually like move with their entire body. And the traditional side armor is just a completely different weird thing. So long story short with mechanics, you need to get that strength somehow. Some guys get it by falling forward, and that's how they're able to most easily deliver their from the back foot forward, and that's good for their timing of their arm. That's the other. How do I make sure that my arm is in the right place to receive this power at the right time consistently? Some guys want to cock their arm up early. Some of them have a natural thing out of the glove and they don't stop. Some people are doing that elbow thing differently. It's all about that. And for me, when I look at mechanics, I say, how quick is that twitch? How quick are they going from doing nothing with their arm to getting to the release point? And I want that to be longer than shorter. Shorter, that means that it's a very minimal amount of time of travel. That means that timing is going to be so off.
And if you think about it, it could be like kind of a violent, it's like more of a short violent burst as opposed to like more of a, like, we're going to distribute this force over time.
And yes. And if you wanted a good example of someone, I think, who has the best mechanics in baseball, it's Justin Verlander, because that arm is up and just delivers. Yeah. It is crazy how smooth.
I think you can see his drift a little bit too. He's very, he's very also, he's really good at keeping all of his force going towards the plate.
Yes.
You can see that all of his force comes from behind and goes towards the plate. There's very little sort of wasted falling off the mound left or right, or it's all just like tap right.
And what do you know? What's his spin efficiency on his four seamer, right?
Yeah.
How does he have such good IVB? Because it's exactly that. Everything is from the back to the front. And getting that arm positioned in a really good way early on, and then also the timing of that not being this absurd twitch that we see from a lot of young guys that throw hard, but it's just like, boom, you know, that also doesn't always have good extension too, what I found. But those are the things I'm looking for when I see mechanics. Like, are you getting to that release point effectively? Is it a twitch thing? Is it like, no, you have a consistent way of getting there? Are you getting that drive effectively? And it looks like that Festa's has his method, but it works and it's generally consistent, and he's not.
I think it's hard to have plus velo and maintain plus velo and have bad mechanics. One of the guys I think of with bad mechanics was like a Tyson Ross. And because he just didn't do much with his legs. And if you watched him, it was all kind of arm and off to the side in a weird way. And I never really liked his mechanics. And A, he had a hard time staying healthy. And B, had a hard time maintaining velo. And, you know, was always thought of as maybe a future reliever and stuff. So it's like, you know, that's one thing I think of.
Would you say that those who have below average extension, do they have bad mechanics?
That's my bias. Yeah. But I don't know. I don't know if it's true.
I wouldn't be surprised if we found that. Oh man, this is an interesting thing. I'm probably going to get quickly debunked, guys. Okay? I'm telling you right now, this is just a thought I'm having.
That people with low extension
Get injured more.
Yeah.
I wonder if
that would be easy to that would be easy to spot. We could. Right? I mean, the one thing I do know is that the Rays like extension and they get hurt. So
that's hilarious.
Thing I would also say is, haven't you said, and I think this is true, we've seen a little bit of this, like cutter changeup guys, cutter sinker changeup guys. A lot of them don't have great extension. And it has a little bit to do with the actual mechanics, the last mechanics of the grip, the end, the way you finish the pitch.
Right.
And so, you know, there might be 3, 4, 5, 6 inches out there, but you are, you know, pronating to get that change up. You're not trying to reach all the way out there and pronate. You're kind of just doing it, you know, with more of a bent arm or whatever. It's not you know,
right.
And then there was the last bit was like, if you're chasing extension to the point you're Tim Lincecum, and I did have a conversation with he who shall not be named about this, right, that used to pitch like Tim Lincecum. And he said that it does have ramifications for your hips.
Oh, interesting. Because you're just kind of pushing them as far as you can.
You're jumping all the way out there. And I think you're putting a lot of stress on the hips. If you think about the way your body is sitting, like think about that drift philosophy I was talking about. I don't think you have much drift if you're sort of jumping all the way out there with your front foot.
And well, it's also really hard to get timing right because it's a jump. Is that jump going to...
His command was never that great. Lincecum's command was never that great.
I mean, the number one example of guy jumping, I mean, come on.
It's Carter Pounds.
Carter Capps. I still think that was one of the greatest moments in baseball history. I know it sounds crazy, but that was a dude who was just like, I figured it out, y'all.
Like, I just jump off this thing.
Yeah, if I jump off. I mean, this is also, every kid does that at some point.
But you can you imagine like facing him? I would have crapped my pants, because not only he threw like 97 anyway, you know?
Yeah. And then he also had a wipeout slider that was just like,
and he's literally launching his body at you.
Yeah. But every kid does this. I mean, anyone who starting to pitch, they think about it. And like any kid that's like,
I think they overrate how much they have to do with the back foot.
Yeah,
I think they overrate how much you have to do with the back foot. They think I have to push. They think a lot of the velo comes from the back foot, where a surprising amount actually comes from the front foot. When you put the, at least this is what force plate analysis has told us, is that when you put the front foot into the ground, there's a ground force reaction. The ground actually pushes back at you, and that ground reaction allows you to kind of like turn your pelvis around. Like it sort of it stops your pelvis and turns that rotational energy into directional energy.
Yeah. Okay. So I would say that's
the blocking leg.
This is funny. There's a lot more tangents about this I really want to go into, but first we have to take a quick break. So do you remember CeCe Sabathia and what he said about his weight?
Yeah.
That when he lost weight, he felt like he wasn't as good. He had to get the momentum. And that's what I take from that. When it comes to your front foot, you're not really like, you're not really getting force from it. You're maintaining force. Mm. Like you need to have like an elephant's foot in the ground so that when you have all the force going forward, you can support it. Mm. Right.
Interesting.
And
I think of it sometimes as like a javelin. Mm-hmm. They slam that front foot in the ground and then all their force goes around it. So there's, I think we're talking a little bit similarly.
Right.
It's like a pivot. It's like your foundation. It's like a stability thing. It is the foot that's on the ground when you release. So it's obviously.
And a thought that is constantly there with me is you have to feel like as you pitch that you are extending over that leg. Mm. And there certainly have been times where I've been pitching where it was a weird mound or I had to change my mechanics slightly. And I always felt like I was pitching behind that leg.
And that wasn't good.
I mean, and that's not good, not good at all.
Obviously, it's
just like I'm feeling like I'm throwing behind the ball. I don't have everything there.
And so like the javelin thing, you need to be able to put that thing down and go around. Like if you think of a javelin guy, they put their leg down and then they go past it. They like put fling their whole body over it. You know?
Right. Oh yeah, you're not even thinking about the javelin itself. You're thinking about that front left leg and then they jump over it, right?
Yeah, basically they slam that front foot down and then they sort of spin around.
I mean, think about a crow hop, guys. When you're running a crow hop, we see those videos of like 108 or whatever it is when they fall over and they
I found the record and for my piece on how hard they throw the run and gun record with a 3 ounce ball is 119. Mm-hmm. I didn't put that in the piece because
it's
a 3 ounce ball, you're running, you know, but
who threw that?
I don't know, actually. I forget. It was a Tom House, somebody who worked with Tom House.
Mm-hmm. So that's the kind of thing though with that is that you are getting all of this strength behind you, and then you just need a foot that allows you to vault, right?
Yeah.
With that front foot. So that very much so, you're right. You need to have the strength of that leg to endure that and then hoist your entire body over. I see it more as it doesn't matter how strong the front foot is if you don't have the force in the first place with the back foot, right?
Hmm.
And a mistake I made for so long, and I cannot believe that A, no one told me, and B, that I figured it out on my own in college, which is crazy.
Mm-hmm.
I know this is going to just absolutely shock so many. And some people I know don't actually do it, but I needed to. Was I never twisted my back foot. I only left it flat. I always thought that I had to push off like I was at a pool. Like it was me just going off the wall like that. And that's what the force is of it, right? Instead of me actually turning that foot and really think of it like off my toes almost. And necessarily that. It really is that push off first, but then you got to turn it open. That's what gets your hips, Nick, open.
Yes,
you
exactly,
know?
Right.
You're not going to get them open if you don't twist that back foot.
That's right, yeah.
No one told me this. And,
there's a definite ramifications from that, what you do with the back foot and what is happening with your hips. Yeah.
Right. So that is such an important element of it. And like when we talk about, oh man, we need good legs, it's really of finding the way to spring up in some way or just generate that force where you feel most comfortable to make that twist of that back foot and true push off as strong as possible. And then allow it so that, hey, your arm is ready for that force. Your hips are ready. You turn it open. Shoulders come then. You got to make sure too that I see this a lot from pitchers, and I always get a little upset, or at least I get a little nervous when I see the shoulder movement act more as a 3 o'clock to a 9 o'clock as opposed to like a 1 o'clock to a 7 o'clock. And what I mean by that is if you're just turning as if like you're turning your whole body sideways, that means that your arm is going to go that path. Right. And that means you're opening, you have a lot more susceptibility to what we say, flying your shoulder open,
and missing arm side.
Exactly. Because if you fly your shoulder open too soon, that means your arm is behind. And then all of a sudden the ball is lagging, and that means you're gonna miss arm side more and more.
Yeah.
And that often happens when you overthrow. You throw your glove out too soon, right?
Yeah, I've been telling my son Felix, when he misses to his arm side, I'm set. We've been trying a new cue, and I said, just keep your front shoulder in tighter, like keep it in longer, you know?
Right.
So, and so far it's been kind of a way for him to get back in.
That's great. If you're a catcher listening, just tell that to a pitcher if he misses a spot. It doesn't matter. Right. I'm serious. This is why I coached the little league team, our travel team, for a year. And I told my catchers, saying, guys, when you see the pitcher struggle for one or two pitches, give him any piece of advice. Whether it's like get out on top of it, hey, your back foot, whatever, you just got to get them out of their own head and focusing on something, and they'll be better. Right. So that's a very common one. It's like, hey, front shoulder. Just do that. And they'll be, oh, okay, thanks. And they'll be much better than the next one. It's just a mental thing.
Little bit on the feet that's really interesting, the spin that you're talking about there. So there's a lot of force plate analysis out there. If you're interested in reading, Wake Forest has done a bunch of force plate analysis. They have peer-reviewed studies out there that you can read. And I forget the name of the doctor I should know it at the tip of my tongue, but she's done great work there. You know, what they basically said was that front foot force plate, force into the ground is higher correlated with, torso, velocity or basically pitch velocity than back foot. But one of the complications might be, and I'm not sure, I think they had kind of, just a one number force plate. Mm-hmm. One of the complications might be that your back foot is doing something more complicated. The front foot, if you think about it, by the time you're putting it down in the direction of the pitch in one direction, and it stays there. It's right. I think Keaton Wynn does something weird there. Some players do something weird with the landing foot. For most guys, you land on the landing foot and it goes in the direction of the pitch and it's doing one thing. So if you have a back foot that starts out parallel to the plate and ends up perpendicular to the plate, that means that foot is doing something other than going straight into the ground.
Yeah,
it is turning. Right. You know, and so we may find in the future, and this is why I think mechanics are so hard, is that you need the technology to catch up with the questions you have.
Yes,
and sometimes in my piece there was a whole big thing about we think 75 the elbow takes 75 Newton meters of stress. But when we did cadaver testing, the elbow could only take 35. The ligament could only take 35. What's up with that? And then Glenn Fleissig was like, that's because the whole elbow takes 75.
Yeah, yeah, right.
And your bones actually take some of it, and your muscles take some of it, and your ligaments take some. But we have a hard time testing that because we can't test what every single muscle and bone, what stress they're taking.
Oh my gosh.
And so what we may find is, so there's a new advancement in force plate analysis now, which is that the force plates can do directional.
Ooh.
And can tell you a little bit about, like, you know, this is force in that X, Y, you know, and sort of like angles, like it's a much more sort of robust force plate analysis. I think that's,
that's awesome.
There might be people who know all about the results of that bit, but I don't, I haven't seen that yet. And so we may find that back foot is just as important. It's just more varied in terms of where the force is going. It's not all straight into the ground. Some of it is forward. Some of it is forward in into the ground. You know, there's like all sorts of different angles that can have.
Right. Very last thing here. That was fantastic. I love that. And I can't express enough how much I wanted that. I don't have a single clip of me pitching. And it drives me up the wall.
Really?
Oh. Not one. I mean, keep in mind, I graduated in 2010.
Taking a bunch of slow-mo of
iPhone was released in 2008. Okay. I'm old. And I have this giant poster board of me pitching that my parents got me after I graduated Brandeis, being like, don't you want this and put it on your wall of you, this like thing of me pitching? I'm like, no, I am not like moving images. Yeah, right. It was just like a photograph that they sold or something of me pitching. And like, I have this. I'm like, no, I don't want this. I'm like hung up like in my bedroom. Like, what?
Bring your girlfriend home. Yeah, like that's me in college.
Yeah, like that's my room. Like, oh yeah, look at my middle school trophy too. Like, I don't. Why would I do this?
Ferrets like, are the best.
One of those like, I love oh, Ferrets, Yankee fans dude. Only keep out for my door. You know, I'm 36, Mom.
We got it framed for you.
But the very last thing here before I want to go to the actual thing we prepared for today that you did. When it comes to your shoulders, I'm all about that 1-7, which is essentially the glove going forward and then down toward your hip and behind you. Mm. And doing that does two things to me. One, it makes it so you're going more of your energy forward, initially with your glove and then pulling back down and opening it up in this kind of like you're doing a forward crawl in swimming, and going in that direction. So opposed to like a breaststroke. And two, it, I think it's a healthier thing for, generation of power, but also for your command of being able to adjust from the middle as opposed to the side. Mm. And I'm very much a believer that like those sinker sweeper guys are more about shoulders being more 3-9 and your Severino guys being more shoulders 1-7. Mm. And I'm very much more in favor of the 1-7. I mean, look at David Festa. He is more of, he does a little bit of that turn, but he is ultimately more of that 1-7. And as he opens up with a glove and then comes down with it as he goes the whole path, it's really interesting mechanics. Like, where does your glove start and end? Like, are you doing like a full J shape of it is at the 3 o'clock and then goes forward and then down toward the 7? Mm. It's something interesting to kind of take a look at with a lot of mechanics. But he has, what do you know, 4-seamer that has a lot of vert, and then you have the changeup and the gyro slider, right? That is David Festa, and that's, I think, a product of that, of eventually where that the shoulders land there and keeping himself more over the top and naturally like that. It's an interesting thing because we do want lower for Hava, right, for how to adjust the VAA, but also you want the command game. It's an interesting thing. But those are mechanics, guys. Mm-hmm. Welcome to the world of it. We're going to take one more quick break, and then we are going to talk about the real thing very quickly. We only have about 10 more minutes at most. We're going to do that after this break. So we know. So the main thing for today was supposed to be you talking about players with questionable fastballs.
Well, so I was watching Mitch Spence. Yes. And right. Mitch Spence had a good start against the Angels, but in the fifth inning, it was Nibble City, and he barely made it through. And it's a bad Angels lineup, and so now I've have him in a bunch of places for the two start, and the second start is Baltimore, and I'm just hoping the damage isn't so terrible. But
I mean, yeah, it's so boring, but it's what it is. This is kind of who he is
in Oakland, and yeah, but I mean, like. There's reasons I like him. The secondaries are good. The cutter, the four seam with cut, the cutter, whatever it is, that pitch is decent.
Yeah.
It's not a good fastball. The sinker is not good. Whatever, you know, he's barely good with fastball. I would say he's a bad fastball pitcher. And cool. Aaron Civale just got traded. I would say he's a bad fastball pitcher. And both of them fit my query, which is I started out and I said, okay, give me all the pitchers since 2021 that are in the Stuff Plus database that pitched 100 innings. That's 420 pitchers, right? All right, give me all the ones that had a bad four-seam fastball. And I set that at 90 because we're talking about starters. So 90 Stuff Plus. And of the 420, 219. So 219 through 100 innings with a bad four-seam fastball. So just having a bad four-seam fastball is not enough to take you off the list. And right. at the top, in terms of the best ERA, we're talking about players in this bucket. Let me see who I have at the top here. In this bucket, you've got a lot of Ranger Suarez, Tony Gonsolin, Seth Lugo, Jeffrey Springs, Framber.
Framber Valdez.
You look at Framber and you go, okay, reset the thing. So take all these 220 and say, who has a bad fastball and a bad sinker? Because come on. Like
I was just saying his four seamer. Oh yeah, no, you can't do that.
So Framber made me think, okay, never mind. So I took all the guys who had a bad fastball, and then for sinker, I actually set it at 85 because Stuff Plus doesn't like sinkers as much. So I'm trying to like keep that the same level. So now these are all the starters who pitched 100 innings in the last 3 years that had a sub 90 Stuff Plus on the four seam and a sub 85 on the sinker. So these are, you think, okay, this is true bad fastballs. Now right. we got 89 of these guys, and the best is Adrian Sampson. Johnny Cueto,
change it, baby.
We've got Drew Smiley, Dallas Keuchel, Martin Perez. This looks like a group you want to avoid. Interestingly enough, the weighted ERA of this group was 4.2. Not great. Not something you would choose to go after. Well, In
but the fantasy. Thing is, that's still serviceable, right? That's an MLB pitcher.
It's surprisingly serviceable. And these are two start guys, streamers.
Here's the thing. Like, I think you would agree to survive in the majors. If you had to choose, if you have great stuff and terrible command or amazing command and terrible stuff, you would say amazing command.
Maybe.
Right.
I mean, if it was
like the ones who have terrible, who have terrible command, but great stuff, they're just like whatever relievers. But then you have like the guys who can put the ball where they want. That's why you saw Martin Perez do well in the beginning of April.
Right.
Dallas Keuchel just survived in cores.
But you know, there's also the year-to-year action on this, which is like Martin Perez in his good years, yeah. And Martin Perez in his bad years, no. Dallas Keuchel in his good years, yeah. He had great command and not great stuff.
I'm not saying that they have great command now. It's more of just a proof of concept of, we can see how this works.
If I knew that this year this pitcher would have great command, this pitcher had great stuff and bad command. Right. This year, then I would do it. But it was about the year.
That's the whole point. You can't expect that. It's just more of like, we see how those random guys work now. That's why I talk about like a Vargas rule of like, you do not have great stuff, and we know this won't last, but you are in rhythm of your command. Yeah, and because of that, this guy actually can be good for a moment, despite us saying like, this is just nothing.
He might get a little bit of that energy from Mercado. We'll see. I mean, I want more than one start, but maybe. Interestingly enough, though, the Sierra on this group goes up to 4.41.
Oh, yeah.
So there's a little bit of luck keeping these guys in. It's not.
Well, what is luck, though, right? Luck is going to treat batted balls the same a lot, right?
Yeah.
And if you're a command guy, you're going to be like, well, no, that should be diminished, right? They're trying to get those outs in play.
Yeah. Oh, I had this actually sorted by stuff, by cutter thing, because I have one more thing. In terms of best ERA in this group, it's Seth Lugo, Jeffrey Springs, Max Fried.
Fried, yeah.
You know, shows up here. Patrick Sandoval. So there's different ways to do it. And you can't say, oh, these two numbers are bad, so this pitcher is bad. But the group is not as good. Mm-hmm. And it does have a lot of Eduardo Rodriguez, you know, and Michael Wacha in it, where you're like, okay, you know, I love to get their good years. I don't want their bad years. You know, Aaron Civale's in this group. But then I also noticed that Seth Lugo's at the top and he has a good Stuff Plus on his cutter. And I noticed that Dean Kramer is near the top and he has good Stuff Plus. Wade Miley's in this group. He has. So I said, is a true bad fastball, bad four seam sinker and cutter? And like, how bad can I make this group? And what is it going to look like? Right.
Yeah.
So then I got 36 players. In the last 3 years, 36 pitchers have managed 100 innings while throwing a bad four-seam, sinker, and cutter. With cutter, I set the cutoff at 100. Maybe it should have been lower, but that's where I set it. This group has a 4.2 ERA. Again, that's weird. However, they have a 4.5 Sierra. Right. So, you know, we're starting to get to the point where, like, if you're shopping in this bin, you're looking to get lucky basically.
Right. I mean, it's again, I think it's the bin of, look, if this guy is doing the thing he's supposed to do, it can work. And it's why it's like the Desperate Sunday streamer. I think there is a really important distinction that I don't make enough, which is saying, look, this guy has the capability of going six innings and
with
has shown
ERA. That he has enough the command. Whole group is the group has it, you know.
Right. If they can go six innings and they have had that command before, there is more value to that than the normal guy that we think is like just like a normal five inning guy who hasn't really showcased that. We don't really know if his stuff is good enough. We don't know if his command is good enough. Mm. No, I'll rather go with, I mean, this is why I think when people say volume, they mean not necessarily that he's got good stuff, is that there's a possibility that he has good enough command to go six with some sort of regularity, right? Miles Michaelis, is he in there too somewhere?
Yeah, like, this is the Eduardo Rodriguez, Michael Wacha, Tyler Anderson, Johnny Cueto, Rich Hill.
Anderson has a lot of vert, believe it or not, on his four-seamer. It's like, it's really good. It's 17 plus. But it's like super low and velocity and everything. It's just, oh, there's
Bumgarner,
like
some... late Bumgarner is on this list.
Oh, gosh. Remember that?
So Hyunjin Ryu is on this list. Merrill Kelly is probably one of the... But now, this is where it comes full circle. This is what's hilarious.
Oh, here we go.
This is the one elite pitch group.
Yeah.
Every one of these guys has a secondary that's really, really good. Adam Wainwright's on this list. Guess what? Curveball. Tyler Anderson's changeup is the best secondary.
It's mostly changeups, no?
Well, Eric Fetty is on this list. Slider. Wacha. Aaron
Eduardo
Rodriguez on this list. Slider.
Perez.
Yeah, there are a lot of really good changeups on this list. A lot of really good sliders, but you know, Merrill Kelly's best pitch is his curve, probably.
Merrill Kelly?
Or his change, but
oh no, I would definitely say it's his changeup.
I mean, by stuff plus is this curve, but yeah.
Oh, I see. I
mean,
gotcha.
You've got a little bit. What you do also have here is a little bit of that, like, you know, stuff plus has difficulty with changeups, you know?
Yeah. What is a changeup, huh?
Yeah. But like Eduardo Rodriguez's changeup, 91 stuff plus. Kelly's changeup, 87. But they're a good changeup. So any case, this is a pitch where Charlie Morton's on this list, you know? Mm-hmm. Late career Charlie Morton. Late career Adam Wainwright. Late career Rich Hill. So this is the list where you have some moxie, some guile. You still have one good, really good pitch.
Right.
And all of your other stuff is not great, but you're mixing it around it and you're figuring it out.
So there's two sides of it to me. There's the there is that changeup one, right? I mean, in some ways that's kind of like Ranger Suarez a little bit right now. And we just saw the changeup not as good for two starts. And that, I mean, now zero strikeouts against the Marlins is like, guys, there's a problem. But the other side of it is the slider focus. And I call that dancing with the disco these days.
Yeah.
Where it's just like sliders all over the plate and we're going to get through this. That's Zach Littell in my view.
Mm.
That is, Yanni Chirinos is doing that right now. I mean,
Eric Fetty to some extent, I mean, his slider's his best pitch. And then he's got other pitches that he's just trying to mix in around it.
You say Freddy?
Fetty.
Oh, Fetty. Oh, yeah, sure. I mean, yeah, the cutter sweeper, right.
But my last bit on this is just like, I would not shop in this list before the season. This year's entrants to the list are Tyler Anderson and Eric Fetty. And I would not buy them again next season.
Right.
But in season, like you said, you know.
In season, if they're in the groove, you can kind of go for
it. 4-2 our ERA for the group. You know, over the course of, you know, these are not that small samples. This is 22,000 batters faced, produced a 4-2 ERA.
Yeah. So very last point here. So going back to that slider thing, dancing the disco, if you can just do that and get enough strikes with it, great. There is something I call the Wasker rule, which is after Wasker Ynoa, who had an elite slider, hard fastball that was just crushed
and nothing
else. And that was bad command, right? And once if you just have one good breaking ball and bad command without a good fastball, that's not going to last.
Yeah.
So the three things you need to have a command with the good pitch.
The three things are good stuff on a fastball, good stuff on a secondary, and command. And you kind of need to have two of the three.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Pretty much. So we're gonna leave you guys with that. You know, fantastic talking to you. Do you have anything quickly you want to talk about? You're about to go live, but you're going to do that regularly?
Yes, and we might switch it to Thursdays, but yeah, live stream to this week is early with the Trevor May, but going forward, we might try Thursdays because Fridays is kind of a getaway day for everybody.
Yep.
I've got a piece on 10 years of StatCast coming up, and if anybody wants to check out my piece on throwing 125 what? Miles an hour, as one analyst told me is possible, that's up right now on The Athletic.
Fantastic.
Yeah, that was a good piece to write.
And over here, I'm working on what we're calling the Pro Dashboard for next year. I cannot wait for everybody to see that. The design of it is looking absolutely gorgeous. I'll be talking about that in the later months. But until then, Eno, thank you so much for becoming my guest here on The Craft today. Such a rarity. My name is Nick Pollock, and we'll talk about The Craft of Pitching again next week.